Subcommittee 3. Subcommittee of Subcommittee 3 to order. And I'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 860. Former Representative Bradbury, welcome. Welcome to the right side of the building.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Senator Bill Bradbury, Senate District 24. Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 860 is an incredibly simple, wonderful bill that really does one very simple thing. It says that HARP payments, which are, and elderly rental assistance, which are part of HARP, are not subject to garnishment except by a government entity. Let me tell you where this bill comes from. A constituent of mine, a 61-year-old woman by the name of Julie Rose, recently got a divorce. Her husband went with the van, although that was not written up in the divorce settlement. He didn't make payments, and the company came after Julie for the money because the ex-husband was on Social Security and his income was protected. And what they did was garnish her HARP check of $750 last October. Now, I think what's important to recognize is that only people with very low incomes get HARP checks as big as $750. And it's very clear that those people really depend on the money that comes from the HARP check. So she had her HARP check garnished through really no fault of her own. She doesn't have any backup. She is too old to get child support, and she's not old enough to collect Social Security. So I would suggest that it would be appropriate that we exempt HARP payments from attachment by private collection agencies. And that's what the bill does.
Bill, what was the... was there any debate over this or controversy in the Senate over this?
Frankly, Mr. Chair, I went to the Senate Judiciary Committee and testified. I was the only one signed up to testify, and they moved the bill out in front of me. And there was no controversy. I think it might have passed unanimously on the floor of the Senate.
Questions of Senator Bradbury?
Do we have anybody else signed up on this one?
Bill, you just signed up. Is there anybody else on the sheet?
No. What you can draw from that reality is that the collection agencies of the state are not very concerned about being denied their ability to garnish HARP check.
I've got a note from Mr. Jim Walter for the record. Portland number, it appears. From the Legislative Committee, Debtor-Creditor section of the bar, that's in opposition to the bill. Counsel, if you took the note, you maybe can make out your notes.
Maybe. They oppose the bill because they believe that the type of money that the HARP payment is a basically a different character from the other types of money that are listed as exempted. They sort of categorize the other items as more like subsistence type things. I mean, Social Security, public assistance, unemployment. They're the sort of things they believe that people plan on receiving and can budget. And they see this a refund more is kind of a windfall, something that people normally are not able to count on in the sense of knowing that it's going to be coming in. And that's basically their objection to it.
Mr. Chair, why don't I respond to their objection?
Please.
I know a large number of low-income, particularly senior citizens, who budget their HARP payment. And we should all remember that a HARP payment comes as an offset to the property taxes they're assumed to be paying. In fact, it's based on the property taxes they're paying coupled with their income. So this, if you consider having to pay property taxes not something that is affects your ability to subsist, then that's a fine argument that they've offered. But if you think that property taxes come out of the same pocket that all other payments come out of that you need to subsist on, then their argument doesn't hold much water.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Ready to go into work session on this bill?
We will go into work session on Senate Bill 860.
I would move Senate Bill 860 to floor due pass.
I'll place the motion to full committee.
Full committee.
Due pass. Placed by Representative Bellamy.
If you insist.
Is there further discussion? Representative Bauman, we're on Senate Bill 860.
I trust that Senator Bradbury is a proponent.
Now, that is not a very safe thing to do.
She said is a proponent. She didn't.
You served with him as long as I have, you wouldn't say. You read it very carefully.
Then Representative Bradbury is the person in this floor speech against wood permits, pointed to the man in gold and said, what would you do if he had to have a wood permit with that thing over his shoulder? I'll never forget it. The bill would exempt part payment from garnishment of private creditors. Is there a discussion? Hearing none. Gloria, will you call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion is adopted. Chair will carry that.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 860 and open it on Senate Bill 368. Mr. Lombard.
This is very interesting. We're going from garnishment to adoption to death tonight. Which one is this, Mr. Chair?
368.
368.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Kip Lombard. Although I am a registered lobbyist for a number of clients, I'm here strictly on my own behalf on this little bill, and I appreciate your setting it at this time. Let me just tell you a very quick story as to what the background of this bill is. This last summer, 1986, I had some clients who came to me, husband and wife, second marriage. Husband had been married before, many, many years before, about 35 years before, and had a child by that first marriage. Lost track of the child for a number of years, and then about two or three years ago, they were reunited. The first wife, the mother of the child, has long since been deceased. The second wife, father, and the child struck up a very cordial, very friendly relationship. And the reason the clients came to me is that the second wife said, I would like to legally adopt my husband's child, an adult adoption. Why? Because there was a trust established by the second wife's father that left income to the second wife for the remainder of her life with the principal to go to her children. Well, she didn't have any children by this second marriage, but she wanted the principal that her children would otherwise get from her estate to go to husband's son. So we said, well, you can do that by a legal adoption. You can actually go through an adult adoption. One of the statutes, and I noticed, and as I was aware before, that in 1985, this legislature, principally at the request of a number of adoption agencies and Children's Services divisions
Senator
set up.
Senator Hanby.
Pardon? And Senator Hanby. That's correct. You're right, Representative Hanlon. Set up a fairly complex reporting and accounting procedure, and there were very good reasons for that.
Prohibition of child selling.
Child selling, and I think there were some abuses as well, otherwise, with private parties involved in adoptions. We looked at that.
That bill was substantially amended when it came over from the Senate and hit the House Human Resources Committee.
Was it? Okay. Well, the very appropriate, of course, for those circumstances, but we looked at it and said in an adult adoption, this really doesn't make a lot of sense. There doesn't seem to be a good public policy reason to require all of these reporting requirements in adult adoptions. And so I asked Senator Hannon to introduce Senate Bill 368 for me that would make what is now ORS 109-311, the various reporting and accounting provisions, applicable only to minor adoptions. That seemed to be really to focus in on the public policy reasons, and that's why I'm here requesting support of this measure. Children's Services, I understand, is here. They testified in the Senate in support of the measure, and so that's it. I'd be happy to respond to questions.
Why don't you just stay right there, and
sure.
I won't take questions just yet. Fred Stock, will you stay up there, Ken? Thank you. We're handing out a written statement from Children's Services Division. Mr. Stock, will you introduce yourself?
For the record, my name is Fred Stock. I'm the manager of adoption services for Children's Services. As Mr. Lombard, as...
Let me just ask it.
Okay.
Is your position in support of the bill or against it?
It's very definitely in support of the bill, and as I pointed out in my written testimony for you, in the 1985 legislature, unfortunately, the language was not clear. The intent was that this language did affect minor children under the ages of, meaning individuals under the ages of 18 would not be included in those provisions, and since that time, we have been waiving those types of studies. Unfortunately, the case that Mr. Lombard has cited, individuals weren't aware of that, and it was extremely unfortunate that the circumstances occurred the way that they did. What this bill will do is address the intent and also address the total support that our division has.
Thank you. Are there other witnesses? Questions of these witnesses? If not, I'll open the work session on Senate Bill 368.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 368 to full committee with a due pass recommendation.
And I'll place that motion. Is there further discussion? If not, will you call the roll, please?
Aye.
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 Aye. The motion is adopted. The chair will carry that bill and close the work session on that and open the work session on Senate Bill 299. Council, can you bring us up to date?
Right. Chair, Senate Bill 299 is a bill that was sponsored by the bar. We had a hearing on it last week. And it relates to the Uniform Limited Partnership Act. It makes certain changes that would probably make it easier to operate a limited partnership in Oregon, and it would make Oregon's law similar to the laws of the neighboring jurisdictions. I believe there's an analysis that was handed out that was submitted on the Senate side.
Do we have anything in the packet tonight?
It should be. I handed it out just before we started. This passed the Senate unanimously.
Yeah, we've got that. I've got it in my packet. Members, you should have that. Were there proposals to do anything with the Senate version?
Yes, there was. There are some amendments that are being drafted there. I have yet to receive them.
Well, I don't think we're in a position, if I recall, to deal with amendments, I think the proponents were, where were the proponents from on the amendments?
The proponents proposed the amendments, the gentleman from Mr. Leonard from the Corporate Counsel's Office, the amendments, which I assume would be available at least for full committee, were more along technical nature, making some changes that they failed to make on the Senate side.
They were aware that we were meeting today on this issue.
That's correct.
What is the committee's preference on this?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dix.
You know, I mean, if they want the bill, I'm incensed that they're not here and the amendments weren't scheduled, but at the same time, if we move it up to full, it seems like we're just going to move it back down to sub, and I'm not sure if that's the prudent thing to do. I mean, this seems when we operate in a hasty fashion, we're not getting
it. I agree. Let me ask counsel a question. Were these amendments, to your recollection, live or die type amendments?
They were not live or die type amendments. They were amendments that really, they were more cleanup. I hate to use the term, but they were not substantive amendments. This is a technical bill. It relates to a technical area, limited partnerships, and the amendments were more cleanup. I'm sorry they're not here yet. I have brought them down to Legislative Council.
Representative Miller.
I'm not uncomfortable moving the bill to the full committee. If we deem that we're uncomfortable with amendments that are proposed between now and the next full committee meeting, or when this would be available for full committee meeting, I guess we can so state and reject the amendments.
I'm not, if we move it to full committee, I'm not very amenable, Representative Miller, to start discussing amendments at full committee. That's just my reaction. And well, the proponents who testified in favor of some cleanup amendments have, I consider it their duty to make sure that those are available from Legislative Council. They have our calendar available to them, and they're aware of our schedule and of this committee in particular and how busy it is. Representative Miller.
I appreciate your being uncomfortable with that approach. All I'd say is that whoever is proposing these amendments has the opportunity, perhaps prior to the full committee, to make you feel more comfortable with what they're doing, then I suppose you might support them. If you don't, then you can say no if they're raised in the full committee.
When are we next scheduled to meet?
I don't see the problem, quite frankly.
We're scheduled to meet Wednesday next. Okay. The chair will put the bill over and put it up. Council
Chair, if somehow I can get the amendments on the Legislative Council, or if they're here and I just can't find them, then I would ask that I get back to you, and maybe we could put it on before the end of the session.
End of tonight?
Yes.
Fine. Either we'll put it off till later on tonight or over until our next hearing. And I'll close the work session on that and open it on 298. Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, this is a bill that's on for hearing and for work session.
Right.
Possible work session. Once again, it's a very technical bill. It's been sponsored by the bar again. It relates to trade secrets. What it does is propose to make changes in the current statute so that, once again, we are similar to Washington, California, Idaho, other neighboring states. There's an analysis that they did on the Senate side, and I believe that they provided copies of it. It sets forth the fact that if someone feels that they have been abused and that their trade secrets have been used, you can seek injunctive relief that allows for attorney's fees, etc.
What is the current status of the trade secret law in Oregon? This is just a brand new subject area that we have not dealt with in statute prior to this time?
What this set bill is not amending anything. It is a current new section 7.4 for what's available here. What I understand is, according to the analysis, trade secrets law is all currently case law. And what this will be doing is be setting it forth in statute.
Counselor, can you tell us how this differs from existing Oregon case law? If not, I think we have a witness here who may be able to respond to that question.
I would appreciate it if you go to the witness. It'd be my assumption that it would follow substantially case law, but I'd prefer that the witness testify to that.
We have somebody from the Department of Justice here that can respond to that question. Sure.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Nestle. I represent the Oregon Department of Justice, and I'm merely here in support of that portion of the bill which provides a little bit different treatment for public bodies. As counsel for the committee has indicated, in Oregon,
Let me put my question to you again. Did you mean to respond to the question?
I did not, but in my research I am prepared. This is an area that until now has been treated as what they would call a common law action of conversion, the stealing of someone's secrets. It's treated as a property right, and it is only handled as you would have the theft of any other type of trade property interest at this point. I think that the uniform law has been fairly well fleshed out. I think that one of the leading states, state of Minnesota, has already had a couple of state Supreme Court opinions on it, and this does provide a framework and a list of remedies and how to approach them that keeps the law in this area. I think.
Do we have any cases in Oregon on this subject matter?
I am not aware of any directly in Oregon.
Diana, can you respond to that?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, I'm Diana Godden, representing the Oregon State Bar. I apologize that our expert on this, Mr. Alex Johnson, couldn't be here this evening, short notice, but he will certainly make himself available to the committee before this committee. If the committee wishes to act on the bill and wishes to have more information, he will be available. As far as the issue of Oregon law, it's my understanding that there is Oregon law in this area. However, many of the issues raised in the whole area of trade secrets have not been decided in reported Oregon case law, and some issues have, the same issues have been decided differently at different times by different courts. Unfortunately, the present state of Oregon trade secrets case law makes the probable outcome of any trade secrets dispute unpredictable, because there is not very much law, and what there has been conflicting.
There's a number of gaps. Are there Oregon cases?
Pardon?
Are there Oregon cases, or did you respond to that? You're talking about case law throughout the nation.
No, there are cases in Oregon, and let me see if I have some citation to those cases, Mr. Chairman.
Diana, I don't think the committee is terribly interested in the citations.
I'm not prepared to discuss the substance of the case law because I've not read it.
How does it differ from the bill? Are there differences?
And I'm not prepared to answer that question, but I will get that question answered for you, Mr. Chair.
Policy-wise, I think we should know that before we act in an area of this concern. I mean, are we overruling our own court in order to adopt this law is something that we should know. Are there other questions of either of these witnesses? Mr. Nestle, was there something that you thought absolutely necessary to add on this bill?
No, Mr. Chairman. We were just here in the interest of the public bodies and their protections under the Tort Claims Act being preserved by virtue of the Senate amendments. I understand that the bill did pass with 28 votes in favor in the Senate and two persons out on legislative business. So,
Diana, I'm going to put this bill up next Wednesday again so that that question can be responded to before we act on it.
I'll have my witness specifically prepared on that specific question, as well as other issues, next Wednesday evening.
Anybody else here on Senate Bill 298 or 299? You're on the committee or not? Council Taylor is gone.
Last. He has disappeared.
I will open the work session on Senate Bill 471. We have Senate Bill 471 is before us, and if you look at the printed bill, this subcommittee has deleted the word "only" at line 18. And is the only change of the bill. That is present status of the bill in this subcommittee. We have some materials here, probably more than some. We have a dash 4 amendment. I know that Representative Bunn wished to speak on this. And do we have correspondence from Representative Bunn?
No, we do not.
Well, Ira, will you come forward? Are you here? Do you have the ability to represent or to tell us Representative Bunn's position on 471?
I was there. Yes, I do.
Okay.
And that position is in the amendment with the dash
four.
The dash four amendment. And we have agreed to that. And he supports that amendment.
And you represent who?
The Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence.
The original sponsor of this bill.
That is correct.
Or the requestor.
Right.
And tell us what they do. Why don't you just walk us through them?
Well, what the amendment does is it deletes the current amended language, which basically states that in lines 20 and 21, section 4 is deleted, and that had basically said the court shall consider abuse of one parent by the other as being contrary to the best interest of the child. And in section 1 after line 10, there's a D inserted, which states that the abuse of one parent towards the other is a relevant consideration in determining welfare of the child and custody matters of the child. And what that does is it makes it clear that that is a consideration which should be made and could be looked at, and it's to be evaluated the same as other considerations in that section. Removes essentially the strong presumption that such behavior is detrimental to the best interest of a child and leaves more discretion with the judge.
We also have...
There's a problem in the amendment, I think.
Go ahead, Representative Bauman.
On line 6 of the proposed amendment, dash 4, I think what it should read is in line 22, delete parens 5 and insert parens 4. It just makes it easier to follow if you
are
on the right
correct.
Line.
Yeah. Line 6 of the amendment, the first number in the sentence should be 22 instead of 5.
Yes.
Yeah, that is correct. What else do we have before us on this bill?
The other things that you have...
I have some Hinton Gross dash 2 and dash 3.
Okay, the dash 3 are to be disregarded. Those were the original Bunn amendments, and he and Ira came up with this other. So the dash 3 are dead.
Okay.
There's something that I marked C and D that I understood you and Frank Ruber discussed and that you wanted prepared.
That is correct. Why don't you C and D, I have B and C.
Well, One of my numbers is sort of cut off. Maybe it is B and C.
Okay, if you look at hand engrossed B. Members of the committee, hand engrossed B would indicate that those were those that conduct preceding it would be mandatory for the court to consider that conduct if and only if it is shown that those factors are causing or may cause emotional or physical damage to the child. That is akin in the language to leaving the original printed bill the way it was, but making it more specific, making the intent of it clearer. Is that Representative Baumann, is that correct?
That's acceptable to me. I mean, I think that's...
Well, I'm just trying to get the English straight before I find out if it's acceptable. Is that a correct interpretation?
Chair, did Representative Baumann draft these?
No. I talked to Mr. Gruber between revenue and on my way to the floor of the House. It was at my request.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Baumann.
The object is to clarify the purpose of the word only.